Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, that was The Words You Cannot Say. Beautiful little song. That was a poem written by Jay Hatter and put to music by the singer, Shout Even Shy, the singer, poet herself. Beautiful song. This is Deborah Lee, and you're listening to A Team of Voices Radio. We are a radio group that hangs out at allpoetry.com. We write poems together and hang out at each other's shows and chat on the chat wall. And if you're a member, and you can click on to A Team of Voices, and the links for the poems that are used on the show are shared there. And you can click on and follow along with the readers, or you can call and participate. If you're not a member, it's free to join. Look them up, allpoetry.com. Great place to hang out. To call in, you dial 1-646-668-2837. Again, that's 1-646-668-2837. And we'd be glad to hear from you. And before we kick into the show, there's some bleeding hearts soapbox I want to spread tonight. the news has been really discouraging about the what's the new cash word, food insecure Americans. Just what we needed was a new label, a new trend. But it seems that the pantries and food kitchens are overwhelmed, and the amount of people going to those pantries and food kitchens and places as such have had 100% changes. For example, you know, if they helped 300 people eat in a month before, now it's closer to 3,000, and they're having a really hard time keeping up with it. So if you can, donate to your local food pantry. And since my big brother is not here, I'm just going to jump right into the show and say that Mr. Racontor was here when I got here. Glad he's here. Hey, Rack.
Hey, Debs.
Happy
glad
that
you didn't
you're
fly
here. I know, right? And right behind Racontor is none other than the dynamic duo from A Poetic Slice of Life and part of the A Team of Voices team, Kay, the owner of A Poetic Slice of Life, and her handsome husband, Steven. Hey, you two. Welcome to the show. Hey, and I have it on good authority that you are close to a special wedding anniversary, so just figured I'd mention that. Happy for you both. Glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And right behind a amazing couple is Mr. David Proppet. Hey, Dave, glad you're here. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Dave. I'm pleased to be here.
And, okay, now, since I did call and read over at A Poetic Slice of Life, I know that Kay and Steve have been on the phone running their show for a few hours. So as we always do, let me run over and grab Kay's, and I'm putting that on the board. And tonight, normally the poets are offered a collection of personal prompts to choose from. I usually try to put two or three with each poet in mind, and then my fun is to see which one of those they pick, or if they go with something else, and then I know what to put in their folder. I learn as they choose. But tonight I coupled them with some bits and pieces of poetry from Bill the Poet. So I'm anxious to see what quotes were chosen and how the poems turn out. So Mrs. K, if you would tell us which quote you wrote to and then read us your poem, that would be fantastic.
Okay. There's a quote. Let us rest until the morning sun marks the day with its goldenrod, catching the sweet nectar of a brand new day on the wing of a breeze. And I call us unbiased hushes, cinnamon clementine, sweet happiness. Maple avenues to Wheeler's Creek, gentle tap on the family trotting through in Deerfield Trust. Hearthside Grove blushes through in places where cattle night tales and Katie did singing a tune. Water's golden days of guilt and shame seems me. No armaments to clutch to and let go. The sacred days and holding time, edge was. Those who smock the pallid form. And some.
Way cool. Some really awesome imagery there. But let me go back to that title. I really like the unbiased hushes to cinnamon clementine, sweeps, happiness. There's such a joy in the title. It sets the mood, and then you see the gorgeous little kitties all snuggled up, and I mean the contentment is written all over the art. And your descriptions with the maple avenues, like you could just imagine that maple avenue would smell good, that it would feel good. Hearthside Grove blushes through in places where cat and nine tails don't hiss. I thought that was a clever play on words there. and worth it. No ornaments to clutch to in letting go as centuries bay in Highland Pine Edge waters, erasing the smocks, and I'm stealing all the words. But sometimes I just get lost. I keep reading more and more because the descriptions really pull you in. And I'm back to the second or third line again because I really did get a kick out of it, where the cat of nine tails don't hiss. I'm a little afraid to find out where the cat of nine tails do. Ha ha. But no, I think this came out awesome. And like I said, there's something really, really sweet in that title. So I think that the brevity is gorgeous here and speaks well to the quote that you chose. And impressive metaphors, as always. So let me get you a couple comments here. I'm going to start with you, Racontor.
Well, cat of nine tails are known to hiss when they whip through the air. But the imagery in this is you know, always stunning, the way that you write, Kay. You've got flavors and things in there, the scents that evoke all kinds of craziness in my brain, especially because I'm a bit of a foodie, which I imagine your husband is. So, you know, there's that. There's a lot that resonates with nature in this that's just tugging in different directions. That when I think of the morning, you know, you've got, you know, breakfast is the first meal of the day or whatever. So my mind goes to that. But you've got so much more than that because you're outside and you've got the nature. But, you know, I can't help but embrace, you know, you've got the cinnamon and the maple and things like that. That those scents specifically are like, you know, that's breakfast to me. And, you know, those smells, you know, are morning smells too. Not that they're limited to that, but, you know, that's just where my head tends to go. And then, you know, you've got the cat of nine tails and even the katydids, which made me think of your name, because anything that's got like K in it, you know, I kind of like, you know, oh, that was clever. You know, I don't know if you were thinking that when you did it, because, you know, people tend to have specific feelings about their names being messed with. So it's like, you know, really? You thought of me? Come on. But yeah, you know, it's just one of those things. I don't know. People like to mangle people's names, and it seems, you know, nobody's content to calling somebody what they are. It's like Steven isn't Steven. He's Steven 76. That's the way he reads it. That's who he is. That's just, you know, that's Steven. So, you know, anyway, I appreciated your piece, though. I really, you know, it definitely, like Deb says, you know, it sets a mood, and it would be, you know, lovely in the morning or even the late afternoon. gorgeous piece.
Thank you.
Fabulous comment. And Mr. David, would you comment for Kay, please?
Yeah, this is really a beautiful poem. I love the prompt. The cats are so cute. Kitties, I should say.
Right.
Maple Avenue to Wheeler's Creek. I like that a lot, too. We have a lot of vine maple out here in the Pacific Northwest, and it's in full bloom right now. And it makes a nice backdrop to the Douglas firs, which are kind of a dark emerald green. So that sort of reminds me of what's going on out here. I like the line, hushes of lilting katydids singing a tune. Yeah, they do kind of lilt when they get going. Waters of golden days of gilting shine swoons me. No armaments to clutch to in letting go. This is a nice poem. It really speaks well of autumn and the mood that it sort of puts you in. It's kind of a transition from summer, you know, into a cooler time of the year, and for winter gets here, it's a nice transitional period, and I think your poem, you know, it illustrates that really well. So I liked it. I thought it was really well done.
Thank you.
Great comment, David. And before you comment, Stephen, let's say hello to Hatter. Hey, Hatter. Glad you're here.
Hey.
Better late than
never.
So, you have clicked in with Racontor and Stephen, N-K, and Dave Prophet, and me. So, hold on a second, because here comes AP right behind you. Hey, AP, welcome to the show.
Hi, Deb. How are you?
Hanging in there. Glad you're here. And I'm just about to get a comment for Kay from Stephen before he reads, so I'll be back to you shortly. And Stephen, will you comment for Kay?
Yeah, first off, I have to say that the prompt, the picture, it makes me think of Claudette cuddling with the Queen. So I think that's a perfect picture to write to.
Yeah.
And the words, I love the words because, you know, I even see it in the author's notes. This was the day we took the Sunday drive down the north coastline to the drawbridges in the harbor,
mm-hmm.
a little ways down.
Yeah.
And I could see some of that in this piece as well. So yeah, I thought it's beautiful. I told you that the descriptions not only describe the tranquility of the picture, but also that wonderful drive along the north coastline.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful piece.
The poem was good too.
That. Oh, boy. You're in a mood. Okay. Now, Stephen, would you want to read before or after you tell us what's happened over at Poetic Slice of Life?
I could really quick tell you what's going on real quick. I'll do that. Our next show, instead of on Wednesday, the Inklings is going to be tomorrow because we have visitors from out of state here to celebrate with us for a couple different occasions. And the Inklings will be at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. It is very one-liners from different books that Kay found on the website of these scary one-liners. Like the first one is the last man on earth sat alone in a room and there was a knock at the door. It's sentences like that to write to. That's tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. And Sci Friday this week will be on Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. And we're looking at both of The Flies, the 1958 version of The Fly, as well as one from the 80s with Jeff Goldblum, who quotes from both movies to write to. And again, that's 9 p.m. Eastern. And Saturday is Storyboards with Sky Darkholm at 8 p.m. Eastern, and she's featuring the animated movie Coraline. Quote writes, character writes, scene writes. Come and geek out with Sky, 8 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. That's what we got.
Hey, Steve.
Sounds
Steve.
Like cool stuff. Did you say something, Hatter?
Mary?
He's calling Steve.
Steven, what's the deal with the fishing derby or the fishing? You heard that? Guy got caught cheating in Lake Erie. Got caught cheating in a fish tournament.
I didn't hear about that.
Oh, he didn't. They were so pissed. It looked like he's lucky to get to leave with his stuff. It looked like they were going to lynch him.
Wow, I didn't hear about that. I'll have to look it up.
I thought it was
oh yeah, I saw
deal.
That. I thought they were going to kill each other. They were so angry. They literally,
oh man,
you know, like cut them open, like to gut them, and then fill them with lead sinkers, aren't they? Sinkers? And, you know, of course they weighed up quite a bit more when they got a big chunk of lead inside them. So I mean, I really thought they were going to go to blows right there on the dock. So, yeah, look it up.
Everybody's read the Calaveras County frog jump, you know, the Mark Twain?
Yeah.
That's what it was. They got caught. Putting pellets, lead pellets in the frog.
Wow.
Yeah, well, these were, I don't know how they thought they were going to get away with it. Sinkers aren't little. These were big. These were, give or take, golf ball size. What the hell? Anyway.
Well, yeah.
But wait a minute. Hatter, give me a second, though. I want to let Stephen and Kay go because they've been on the radio for hours and hours. So, yeah, let me let him. Please, Stephen.
Yeah, the quote that I chose was, in the evening as the sun goes down, the poet rests, sitting in a chair before an open fire with legs outstretched. And I call this On the Banks of the Pamatuning. as crickets sing and crisp leaves fall to the crackle of the campfire, warming up the soles of feet in Placidy's desire. Marshmallows toast on ends of twigs just reaching golden brown, then mash between 2 graham crackers and chocolate melting down. Retiring into canvas tent where sleeping bag does swathe, lulling to the bullfrog's croak aside the lapping waves. Dreaming of the morning sun when propane flames will pop, sizzling bacon and eggs will fill the nose, and percolated coffee fills the cup. End poem.
Wow. The scene you set there is great image. It was a tease for the emotions with the sights and the sounds and the smells, and it was like drool-worthy camping food at the end. I like the where sleeping bag does swathe, lulling to the bullfrog's croak, and it does. I have, believe it or not, been out there at camping, and it does seem like as soon as you think, okay, it would be so peaceful to sleep outside. Well, in a tent, you know. I need a little bit of a barrier, so I've not slept on the ground without something over my head in my life yet. But, the minute you try to go to sleep, the crickets and if you're near the lake, the frogs and some creepy, screechy things happen. And it's like, so I was getting all these different images as you were reading. I love that you put the little nod to marshmallows in there. I can picture it. You're sitting there. And I like mine burnt on the outside and all the way gooey on the inside, so I'm sitting there with my stick right along with you. I think that this was really, really clever. And I could almost... Yeah. Marshmallows, yeah. And the bacon and eggs, even though I'm not supposed to have pork. Bacon's a hard thing to say no to. And coffee. So, like, yeah, no, this was really cool, Stephen. I like how you took the beauty and of the nature and the campfire that you can see there and painted such a scene. Fine tribute to the quote. And let me get you some comments here. Hatter, you want to comment for Stephen?
Speaking of marshmallows.
Yeah, marshmallows.
And I'm sorry, Hatter, one more second. You guys are always telling me how when I'm done reading, I leave you hungry. Well, it's turnabout, Stephen.
But nobody percolates coffee anymore. You scald your tongue.
Going back in memories of the propane stove my dad had when we used to camp, and it was a percolated coffee maker on that propane stove.
Yeah, that's what I got my coffee stove too. But somebody is always going to burn that because they get used to that temperature of the drip maker. But the poem is well done to the. Was it to the picture or is this a
just the quote? The picture, the quote, and memories. That's what it is.
Okay. Beautiful picture. Yeah, your storyline, you've always had a knack for the storyline thing. There's got a bitch, and here's one of them is that. I must say.
Thank you, Hatter. And Raconteur?
Yeah, I like the percolating coffee, too. I could picture that little thing that nobody does anymore, the little bubble on the top of the pot that, you know, the coffee would spit up and hit the glass and then disappear. That bubble was the percolating, you know, that really speaks to you in a lot of ways. But, you know, I found it interesting that, you know, you chose a quote about evening or nighttime, but you got a lot of breakfast in there. You know, I got the the sausage and everything, and you know, sorry, Deb, but I can't say no to bacon either. I think I got like 8 pounds of frozen bacon in my freezer, so I'm not gonna ever be without bacon. It goes on sale. I buy as much as I can handle and store, and then I eat it until it goes on sale again. You know, I really love the imagery that you chose, because, you know, even if it is, you know, a nighttime quote, you know, the night heralds the morning. So, you know, you sleep through the night and you wake up in the morning. It there's a wonderful symmetry to that. And you know, from the, you know, the idea of going to rest, going to sleep, you know, eventually, hopefully you're going to wake up in the morning. Right. But, you know, you start off with, you know, the I think the quote mentioned, the poet warms his feet, and you got that in your poem too. And that image itself, you know, is just something about that, you know, the comfort in that, it speaks to me. And this whole piece is like that, you know, it's a, very not so much isolated, just a serene type of you know, Zen moment, I think, that you're describing in this, that's just beautiful. I could see, you know, it being part of a camping trip and the whole, you know, sleeping bag experience and everything. It was toasty warm.
Thank you, Rick.
Toasty warm comment. And David?
I like this a lot because it reminded me of when I was a child. I used to go fishing and hunting with my dad, and we were always sleeping outside under the stars and stuff. And you're right, Deb, it gets pretty noisy out there at night. My dad used to always bring along a percolator coffee pot. And to me, even to this day, I still prefer percolator coffee to any other kind of coffee. It just seems like it tastes better. I don't know what it is. I have a little small percolator pot for when the power goes out up here, which it does all the time. And I have a little propane cooktop, and I bring that out. And at least I can make my bacon and eggs in the morning and some coffee. And I'm a big bacon fan myself. It's part of my morning staple because I'm not supposed to have very many carbohydrates because I'm a type 2 diabetic. So so it gives me a good excuse to work out on bacon and eggs because there's zero carbohydrates in both of them. So anyway, this was really a nice write. You did the prompt justice, and I think I really enjoyed the whole thing. And it's the descriptions in it are first class, so nice job.
Thank you.
You live at the base of a mountain, don't you?
Hey,
what's that?
You live at the base of a mountain, don't you? Basically.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Pretty
much.
Camping all the time. Camping all the time.
Yeah, I'm camping whether I want to or not. That's right.
I'm in this.
100 years ago, Marlboro cigarettes gave out miles on the pack, and one of the things that they had a camping collection as part of it. The coffee pot that I just put on the chat wall, if you take the lid off, it's got the metal coffee basket thingy, and it percolates the little coffee.
Yeah.
I agree. So hot you can peel your skin off. But anyway, I still have that. I couldn't even tell you the last time I made some coffee in it, but like I said, it's 100 years old. Anyway, let me get one more comment from Amy, please.
I really like the poem, Stephen, and I like the poem because it took the comment and the words of Phil and really matched it beautifully with the image, and then you sort of just sat into the image and you put us there with you, and the way you did that was just through you know, just getting there really calmly in the eyes and just showing us where you were and what you were doing, and so you felt like you were there, and that's just it was just a really calming, centered image and a great set of words.
Thank you, AP.
Awesome comments, everyone. And I am going to grab mine because I rarely write for mine, but I can't not when I feature one of you guys. So I wrote. But Stephen and Kay, how much snow are they predicting out there?
They're saying little to no accumulation. It's kind of melting as it hits, but you can really hear it hitting our metal roof and the windows. So yeah, it's I love the snow. So I'm very happy. I'm smiling.
As long as you don't need to shovel snow, I guess that's a great thing, right? Although you do have your handy dandy snow blower.
Yes, and I have all fun right, using well, that too. Believe it or not.
Right. I hear that, Stephen. All right. Well, I wrote for Phil's quote number 7, roots that seep underground appear like talons to pull me down into the cavern. I even included it at the end of the poem. So, Mr. Phil the Poet, thanks for the inspiration. The poem is called Disappearing into Rainy Wooded Darkness. Here we go. Treetop condos hold nesting blackbirds as rising mist eclipses the opal moonlight, moisturizing every leaf in dewy droplets. They glitter for dawn hit by the sun's light. But then just as that glow covers, the sky shrouds rotate gray, blocking bright white. Those fat clouds burst, dumping rainwater, flooding the woods as it pelts the leaves. Ground around those tree trunks bubble. Then dirt cracks and the wet soil heaves, burping petrichor, perfume in the breeze. Shadow lines and the thick fog weaves. Thirsty vegetation drinks fallen raindrops and the drips tap water, then tides churn. Legs carry me running for the clearing, but muscles cramp and then stings and burns. Now, roots that seep underground appear like talons to pull me down into the cavern and pull.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm going to grab the next poem now, and if I can find the board, I'm going to grab
Hold on, Deb, I was muted talking to my mute. Get your comment. It's okay for Deborah. Dave, want to come in?
Yeah.
I try.
Yeah, I would. This is really a nice poem, Deborah. It's very descriptive. I didn't have any trouble at all figuring out, you know, what was going on and you know, just, it was like I was standing right there watching this lady and it's really descriptive. I like the line that says the fat clouds burst dumping rainwater, flooding the woods as it pelts the leaves. Boy, that's really what happens too when it's really raining hard out in the woods. It just does that, and you really described that well. This whole poem is really well written, and it's very descriptive, and I like the adjectives and the metaphors that you use. Really well done. Beautiful.
Yeah, that part, the thirsty vegetation drinks fallen raindrops and the drips tap water when tides churn.
Yeah.
Rack, you want to comment?
Oh, sure. I mean, as much as you start at the top of the trees with the ravens, you definitely settle into the roots. And the visuals are stunning. And that phenomenon that when the ground becomes saturated and the water starts bubbling up, it's incredible to see that in real life. You know, when you see those puddles of water and they're just, the ground won't soak them up anymore, and the water just keeps accumulating. And leaves, not so much when it clears away, but, you know, what's going on underneath with the roots popping up and stuff, that's really a very visceral type of thing that you describe. You know, I can't imagine any child, you know, because I know I did when I was little, looking at something like that and not picturing something coming up from the ground to get you. You know, whether it's, you know, the horns of a demon or claws or tentacles, they're going to grab you and they're going to pull you under. And, you know, sci-fi doesn't help with all their visuals of tendrils, you know, latching onto you and dragging you somewhere one way or the other. It really is a very vivid.
That's a real thing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, no, they have video of the,
thank you,
up in the mountains. They have videos of the water will seep under the carpet in the forest. And if it has intertwined needles and branches that are intertwined, and then it gets wet enough, it stays wet, that it starts growing moss from the whatever dirt is laid over the top. That becomes like a sheet, and water will seep underneath and then puddle underneath it, and you can actually see it move. And it's, you know, I don't know how deep they get, but that's a weird thing to see, and that's exactly what you were describing. Yeah, that moss carpet, I guess that's what it looks like. But I can see somebody falling in and being in deep water, I guess. I don't know. Disappearing. Okay, never mind. Yeah, Rock, did you want to say something, comment?
He just did.
I just finished.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I bet AP's got something to say.
Yeah, AP Taylor, my friend, what's up?
Hello.
Yeah, it was a really neat. I really like the quote that the roots seep underground, appear like taps to pull me down, and that's exactly what this poem was centered on. It was centered on, you know, something that was getting pulled down into the chopping earth, and it was really well described. A great image. Really liked it.
Thank you so much.
Very good. I like these pictures too. Good.
Raving about your writing.
I know.
Raving and writing.
That's sort of why I don't read, but how about we let Stephen and Kay go so they can leave?
Yeah. I see. They've got business.
Yeah. Well, Kay actually had to take off, but I'd be glad to comment because I really like this too. The imagery of the storm is perfect, I think, because I could actually hear those, you know, those first heavy raindrops hitting the ground as you read. But then, of course, you took it into the darkness of being buried alive. I could also possibly see a metaphor in this, either for stress or maybe depression raining down and dragging you under. It's an excellent write, Deb. Very well done.
Thank you, Stephen. And I appreciate you guys for calling in. Say night to Kay, night to you. And I'm going to push play for Marius now, you guys. His poem is on the chat wall, and he is in the chat room.
So Stephen, find out where they buried that guy. What happened to him?
He hung up. You have to ask him another time. And do you see Marius is on board?
Yeah.
I'm so running down the hall.
Don't trip.
And rainy, wooded, darkness. Oh, that's yours. Okay, there you go. Oh shoot. What's it called?
And autumn, Heather.
Grab the wrong one. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Okay, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
I hugged the trees, who were sleeping with their eyes open. They woke up and kissed me tenderly with wet and soft leaves. Then I looked at the sky, happy and dreamy, and we sung along with the wind, a longing song, until morning at dawn. We tied the wings of the cranes not to fly, not to leave us. They promise us that if we release them, they will stay with us forever. We believe them. What craziness. We let them fly free and we saw how they got lost, melting in the sun. We closed the birds in a branch's cage. They could only look up to the stars. We wanted them to sing us a song as never heard before. For days they were sad and silent, and then we recognized we were wrong. We opened the cage, and they left. Then free they sang happily, they kept singing and singing. I fell asleep with my eyes open, but the trees woke me up when they kissed me again, with their wet and soft leaves. I hugged them, sobbing. It was just us and autumn, who looked at us, smiling.
Wow. Well, before I comment, let's say hello to Sweet. Hey, my Sweet. Glad you're here.
How is everyone?
Hi, Sweet.
And Marius. The background music, the change in tempo was like, it went really well with the change in moods that you put in there, because like there was hope in there. There was a little bit of sadness there. There's, I love that we closed the birds in a branch's cage. They could only look up to the stars, and we wanted them to sing us a song as never heard before. I thought that was really beautiful. We opened the cage and they left. Then free, they sang happily. So it was like, you know, they're in there, they're looking up, you want them to sing, and, you know, they'll do it. But then they sang so happily when you let them free. And in the ending stanza, I fell asleep with my eyes open, but the trees woke me up when they kissed me again with their wet and soft leaves. I thought that you put beauty throughout, and I also think that the quote chose from Phil, harmony is the velvet shower that falls on mosaic fields, blushing like crimson under the whiskey-stained sky. I think that you revealed the laid-back, set-in-nature joy that was in the quote. I feel it in your poem, too. But at the very beginning, before I get somebody else to comment, I hugged the trees who were sleeping with their eyes open. And sometimes you see the trees and they have these nubby spots, and it, you know, it could, some of them, like you look around the internet, some of them actually take on a face, an expression. And I was starting to see those as you were, you know, you. So the metaphors in here are really, really cool, and I thought that you did a great job with the, you know, as a tribute to the quote that you chose, and the recording is absolutely beautiful, Marius, so thank you very much. Let me get you some comments. David, will you comment for Marius?
Yeah, I thought this was really a beautiful poem. I like the attention that he gave the trees and the cranes. I'm a big bird man myself. I love birds, and you know, I like to feed them out in my front yard and watch them and stuff. I like the let's see, this the one, two, three, the third stanza down. It talks about the tying their wings up and hoping that they'll sing and they do, but you can't force them to do that, you know, and it sort of, you know, it sort of says that here. It says for days they were sad and silent, and then we recognized we were wrong. We opened the cage and they left and free. They sang happily. They kept singing and singing. You know, there's something really beautiful about something that's wild and seeing it free and, you know, just happy to be alive and doesn't require all of the complex stuff that humans feel they need to have to be happy. These animals are just happy to be alive, that's kind of what I got out of this. A lot of it, it's beautiful the way he talks. He addresses the situation in such romantic terms. It makes the whole thing beautiful, really beautiful.
Great comment, David. Thank you. And Raconteur, mm-hmm. What did you think?
Yeah, Marius, I think, you know, a lot of what we do it has to do with our perspective on life. You know, Dave hears crane, he thinks birds. I grew up in, you know, concrete, so I think construction with girders, but nothing to do with your poem and more to do with your point of view. The more I hear your writing every time, you kind of exemplify the idea of finding beauty in something, because when you describe it, you have such a way of bringing out all those things that people think of and idolize when they talk about something. You know, you talk about, you know, kissing someone, you know, you kiss the bottom of their feet to the point that they don't want to walk on them, you know, things like that. You know, when you say things like that, it stays with someone that hears it. And this is, you know, this is no different. You have a way of latching on to your metaphor in a way that is, you know, not just unique to your point of view, but, you know, as beautiful as you can possibly imagine something, and then to the next level. I really appreciate the way that you do that. It's a beautiful thing to listen to. Thank you, Marius.
Awesome comment. And Hatter?
Yeah, Rack, that's a good way to put that. How do you explain that? Now, I like the storyline. It's very clever. And I think there's representation there. Now, at the beginning, he's got we sang along with the wind, the song, longing song, until morning at dawn. We tied the wings of the cranes, not to fly, not to leave us. They promised us that if we released them, they would stay with us forever. Okay, there's the lie. There's the caged birds. There's the setting them free. And when he says, what craziness, it seems like it was a life lesson because it doesn't dwell on it too much. We closed the birds in the brass cage and they could only look up to the stars. The storyline is very fascinating, very well put together. And then they had it rhyme too, which is excellent. We recognized we were wrong. We opened the cage and they left. Then free, they sang happily. They kept singing and singing. I like this part. I fell asleep with my eyes open. But the trees woke me up when they kissed me again. That freaking, this whole thing is very good. Almost, it's just Autumn who looked up and smiled. Him and Autumn. What a representation. That's very clever, very clever.
Awesome comments, Hatter. And, Sweet, were you here in time to hear the poem? I'm not sure.
I did, and then I read it. I think it's metaphorically brilliant. I love the, there's like a row of sadness and this kind of goes through with the, you know, nature and being part of that, and, you know, the love of, you know, the trees and how they bless us with all this, you know, wonderfulness and nature's etiquette, and how he becomes a part of that. And, you know, he wants to hold on to that for so long, and then he kind of just him and Autumn standing there with what they have and just enjoying what they have after they've released all the love of summer. But there's still that beauty of the autumn in front of them. And I love the symbolism of just him and Autumn standing there. I thought that was beautiful because there is such a beautiful piece of autumn.
Great comment, my sweet. And AP, will you comment for Marius and then read your poem for us?
Yeah, sure. Look, I'm the musical instrument, if I'm not wrong, Marius, was the pan flute, and I think it was being played by George Zamfir, who is a very famous Romanian exponent of that instrument. And the pan flute in that piece that you put there sounded like the wind almost. So to me, the music was almost like accompanying as a backstory to, as Deb said, to the tenor of the poem. But yeah, the pan flute's an amazing instrument. And it just really sort of added to the whole atmosphere. It's such an unusual sound, but a brilliant choice. And so love the words, but love the music in the background.
Awesome comment. Let's show us what you got. And would you please quote the or read the quote you're writing to first?
Yes, I will. And so the quote from Phil the Poet is, "Metallic chimes reverberate around a crisp brass box clawed by the corkscrew talons of plastic ravens." And this is the poem, "The Phoenix and Ravens," and it goes a little bit like this. "Risen burnt ashes of sands and sphinx, Phoenix rises off rivers of red diamond. Flame plumage flow branches as links, wings burn through talons and beyond. Bright as blood and subsumed by heat within ruby glow rings a metallic chime. Flails away stars that dissolve at its feet, talons streaming violence to light divine. Creature is centered upon a metallic box, long emptied of presence violently cold. The small brass keepsake missing locks, murmurs of life betrayed, echoes scold. And at the edges of this deadly carillion wing ravens as vultures to pick at eyes. By number a black wave past a trillion masquerading with night their disguise." End poem.
That's a good ending.
Wow. Okay. Before I comment on the walk through some darkness here, this is an awesome example of how you can take a piece of art that's mostly primarily one color, but actually hone in on some of the tones and pull them in, like with burnt ashes or with the brightest blood and the ruby glow. So you can use more than just one color. I just thought I'd say that because a couple people have asked me, how do you use crayons with just one? Here's an example as to how. And okay, now the rising burnt ashes. So okay, we start out automatically with the visuals of the phoenix, but then we go to the bright as blood, and it's like, ooh. But I'm taking to the third stanza. Creature is centered upon a metallic box, long emptied of presence, violently cold. The small brass keepsake missing locks, murmurs of life betrayed, echoes scold. There's something there, like that. There's a hauntingness to the past, with the past betrayal, the violently cold. How cold does it have to be violently cold? Like you touch it and it's so cold, it's hot, and it feels like it burned you, and you don't know what to think because it you know, it's supposed to be cold, but not that cold. So, like, just that third stanza there, my. And I'll stop taking all the lines, but, and at the edges of this deadly carlin, wings, ravens as vultures to picket eyes. I'm like, holy cow. You don't go dark a lot, but when you do, you know, you're really bringing it out. I thought this was wicked good. Especially if you didn't compliment to that quote. So I think on that notion, I'm going to go directly to my suite.
Oh, sure. Go directly to the suite. Because it's so hard not to. Got a couple of lines in here, Mr. Man, that I have to tell you, I really, really enjoy. First off, overall, I got to tell you, this is pretty brilliant. And I just said last night, wow, I really like this. Got to be probably among my faves, and then going like this. That is blood. By heat with ruby glow, rings of metallic chime, waves away, stars that dissolve at its feet, Italian stream, violence, delight, divine. First off, you've got two favorite words in there. One is blood, and the other, Italian. I love Italian, and that's one of my favorite words to use, so I really like that. And then ravens as vultures to pick at eyes, by number of black wings, casting trillions. Masquerading with night, their disguise. I really love that last stanza. I think it just kind of shocks the senses, kind of get that last really great kick in the teeth. And I love that kind of writing. I kind of do it myself. I usually want to shock the reader into something like, and that is really great ending. Any kind of vulture picking eyes is really fun. But I really think you did something great with between the picture and the quotes. You really brought it together in a badass sort of way. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. Bravo, sir. You're welcome.
Great comment, my friend. And AP, on a side note, Marius is on the board and says you are correct as far as the music.
Oh, good note. Excellent.
Hatter, will you comment for AP?
So the wizard wants to write dark. This is very good. It's like you're staying on the highway and not going into the haunted mansion. You get you're observing. Would that be like a third party?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Narrative, and it does well.
Uncommon for me, but yeah, thank you.
Awesome comment, Hatter. And David?
Well, when I first saw this prompt, it reminded me of something celestial, wouldn't you know? it almost looks like something that the James Webb Telescope would send back. It's about the same 700 nanometer hydrogen alpha wavelength in red, and it kind of reminded me of that a lot. The first two stanzas sort of introduced this specter, if you want to call it that. And I like the first line there: "Risen, burnt ashes of sand and stinks." I'm sorry, phoenix rises off of rivers of red diamond. Really, really descriptive first two lines on that first stanza. Then the third stanza down there, it says, creature is centered upon a metallic box, long emptied of presence, violently cold. Well, this metallic box could be the universe, and there's not much out there except some virtual particles and stuff that are floating around, and it is only a couple of degrees above absolute zero. I don't know. It's really cold out there in space. The small brass keepsake, missing, lost, murmurs of life, betrayed, echoes, scold. Things happen in the universe, and we don't know why. And Perhaps that could be the murmurs of life betrayed, I don't know. At the edges of the deadly Carillion, wing ravens and vultures to pick at eyes. That could be dark matter pushing this thing apart. A number of black waves past a trillion masquerading with night, their disguise. That's the way I looked at it anyway. I thought it was really, really well worded. It's real, really classy, and I enjoyed it. It was real interesting to me. So nicely done, AP.
Thank you, Zach. Cheers. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great comments, everyone. Awesome poem. And, Brack, did I let you comment?
Not yet.
Please do.
See, with AP, I feel it's not so much about the colors. It's about the shading, because he uses it to bring out the depths and things. So, you know, you want to talk dark, and, you know, pardon the pun. Well, don't pardon the pun. I always do that. The shading, the darkness, he went dark on this in a lovely way. The idea of, the phoenix rising from the ashes, and he included the box because he had the artwork that kind of, I guess, led him to that. He didn't just, go there and give us the box. He gave us the feel of the box. He gave us, everything that he felt when he saw that, and definitely using that shading made it a three-dimensional, brought it out thing type of thing. And that's I think his strong suit when he writes. He's got a way of coloring something to the point that, it's not just a flat object that, I recognize it like that. It's more like, it's one of those things that I've felt before, I've seen before, and I've touched before, and it jumps out at you the way that he describes it. So this is no different.
Thank you.
Awesome comments, everyone. And AP, I know you said the top of the hour, so I think it's probably time for you to have lunch or something, but thank you for calling.
I've just got to go up to Sydney tomorrow. I've got to get myself organized. I've got a meeting this evening, so I'll be out of action for most of the rest of the week, Deb. So I'll catch you back on the weekend.
Okay. Talk soon.
Thanks
for calling.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Right.
Can I read mine now, Deb?
No, it's not that. I kind of made a couple of promises, but I will.
Oh yeah.
No,
it's no problem. I figured you made the basket list, and I was late.
Well, here's how. At the moment, it's Titus, Sweet, you,
okay.
And. Okay, so if you guys,
I gotta go behind Titus. Yeah.
Well, actually, you're gonna go behind my suite, so it doesn't, you gotta go behind somebody. But click on Titus's link, and I shall push record. I mean, play. Duh.
Which one we got?
Titus.
How come the room disappears? Okay, go ahead. I got it.
Okay.
Titus. Got it.
Keeps his regrets. Last words. There are many last words, those from readers, I dare say. His verse does leave a sweet taste. Said of lime to slow down absorption. Waste not an exquisite liqueur, say the cheerleaders. Leaders of the lost cause, many poetry books as there are years. I have wasted without you. An empty page it was before we met, Tiberto. Another time and place to lose myself, it looks. Compendiums to which an ideology is shown as the sun goes down. The poet rests, I go back to a time of dexterity. I need to get a backbone, this is what I am told, this ability I seem to lack. Simply a paperweight to my, and a brandy it was to sip a nick. frigidity to be given a strong will. Methinks unhurried, of course, it takes a pause. Most importantly, breathe in, then lift that quill. Let it be a part of you, you shall keep it as a gift from me. For whom now rests but never fame this desire, it tells me, Keats was his name. I drift in and out of what brandy has done, it overcame. Words written, only water the quill did but leave. Books left, more as an epilogue, close to bereft, whose name 'twas writ in water, not to deceive. Other than all that was mortal, ought to be theft.
Wow, there was something in the intensity of the background music that sort of lent itself to the intensity in the poem. So okay, the quote is: "In the evening, as the sun goes down, the poet rests, sitting in a chair before an open fire with legs outstretched." And then Kites jumps into: "There are never last words; those from readers, I dare say." His verse does leave a sweet taste, set of lime to slow down absorption. Waste not, and the exquisite liquor, say the cheerleaders. But there's something there about slowing down absorption. I don't know why it struck me. I'm trying to figure out what because you, okay, so maybe if you slow down the absorption, you're gone before it kicks in, right? Leaders of the lost cause, many poetry books, as there are years I have wasted without you. And something right there in that line, as there are years I have wasted without you, is like heartbreaking line. And I think right about there, there was a change in the tempo of the background music. To a time of dexterity, I need to get a backbone. This is what I am told, this ability I seem to lack. I need one too. And that was when it said I need to get a backbone. I've been called a bleeding heart so many times, and you need to get a backbone, you need to get rid of that bleeding heart. But I say to you the same thing people say to me: don't. You're you. You don't need a backbone. You can get by without it. Let it be part of you. You shall keep it as a gift from me, for whom now rest. But never fame. This desire tells me Keats is his name. I drift in and out of what brandy had done and overcame. The thought there of sitting back there, and, you know, the original quote was by the fire, so I can picture Titus sitting by the fire, kicking back with the brandy, and letting some of this stuff sink in. And I love this end here where it says, whose name 'twas writ in water, not to deceive, other than all that was mortal ought to be theft, Titus Llewellyn, but the one in 1821. So I like how it all ties together so awesomely. And even the grave, the stone, says young English poet. So it's like it hit me with a lot of different emotions there. What a brilliant job.
Wasn't he personal friends with Lord Byron and Shelley and somebody else? Weren't they?
I'm not sure. I know that he's obviously from 1821. I'm not really sure, Hatter.
Maybe
look it up.
Okay.
But what did you think of this masterpiece?
Where I start, it just humbles me. When I grow up, I want to write like this. Yeah, it struck me something was familiar, or I was waiting for something to happen when I was listening to the recording, and when he came to this desire, it tells me Keats is his name. it just popped. Like, I got to go back and reread this because I want to know if he's Keats and Lord Byron, they were and Shelley. These guys were considered like a second generation poet masters or something.
Well, I am looking at John Keats, and it does say that he died
February 23rd, 1821.
This happens to be what the year that it's signed there by Titus Llewellyn. So,
yes.
Well, when was Lord Byron? Was that too early? Was that earlier? Or,
this is all Keats.
He died in 1826, so very, very possible.
1821, yeah.
And they could have been friends in 1821 if he died in 24, so, yeah, they could have all three been friends.
I think they did. I think the Shelley, of a female Shelley, had to write under a man's name because the publishers wanted to accept them too much of female authors. But I believe, I don't know where I know that. But she writes Frankenstein.
Thank you, Heather. Dave Proffitt, will you comment?
Whoops, I'm sorry. I was talking to my mute button. I'm here. Yeah, this was a really amazing poem. I found it sad in some ways, you know, like somebody contemplating on what they did with their life and not happy with some of the avenues or the roads that they went down. I don't know. It was Leaders of the Lost Cause, many poetry books, as there are years I have wasted without you, an empty page it was before we met, hitherto another time and place to lose myself, it looks. That particular stanza there kind of describes what I just said about it. Compendiums to which ideology has shown as the sun goes down the poet's breast, I go back to a time of dexterity. I need to get a backbone. This is what I am told about, told this ability I seem to lack. I never liked that, saying something like that to anyone. It doesn't matter whether they deserve it or not. That's not for me to decide what they need. And I always thought that you had plenty of backbone too, by the way, Deborah Lee. So, you made comments about that. But anyway, this was a really interesting poem, as all of his stuff is, and I liked it. It was pretty cool.
Great comment, thank you. And Reckontor?
Yeah, I mean, Titus is Titus. And there's always something very haunting about the way that he writes, and very appealing. You know, like Byron and Shelley and Keats, he's a classic poet. Setting aside, you know, everything, you know, to talk about him, I think you got to talk about the feeling that he always ends up dredging up, and it's just the way that he kind of grabs at your core and pulls it out. The end of days, you know, the end of the day, he took that to, you know, to a different level, I think, than you know, some people would read it and just, you know, write it in a different way. But, you know, he's actually ruminating about his life and turning it into a metaphor for, you know, philosophy. And that's something that you could always count on, I think, the deeper meaning when he writes. And you know, you're able to dig into certain things and come up with find the romance in
his life and what he brings to the table when he writes. I think his experiences, I could very much feel his sense of, you know, being without somebody, you know, and I don't know if he found her later in life because, you know, the years that he spent without her could be that she left too early, but it could also be that he found her later in life. So there's kind of an open-ended thought to that, but not, you know, only he knows what he meant by what he said when he said that, you know, but there's still that idea of that expression that he put it in an open-ended way that you could take it either way, and it's just equally beautiful to me, you know, and that's what's enviable about the way that he writes. You know, he takes a concept and he glorifies it in a way that's just stunning.
Fantastic comment, Raconteur. Thank you. And my sweet, will you comment for Tony, please?
I definitely did not take this poem as seriously as every one of you did from the very first stanza where he's quite, I dare say his verse does leave a sweet taste, set of mind, slow down absorption, waste not an exquisite liquor, say the cheerleaders. I found a little humor in this as he's just kind of kicking back, he's got everything that he's done, you know, wanting to get a backbone. That's what I'm told about this ability I seem to lack. It was simple paperweight. In brandy it was, to shift the nip's rigidity, to be given a strong will. And things unhurried, of course. I just think that it was a little more lighthearted. It desires, he tells me, Keith is his name. I drift in and out of what Brandy has done. And we're kidding. I mean, in whose name was drift in water, left to the sea, for the event all was mortal, but to his death. And that he signed it, 1821, which of course was Keith, New York Keith's death. I thought, I found it funny. I found him kind of kick back and relaxing and kind of knowing was kind of a little, you know, a little funnish side, a little interest of him. And I really think it's a kind of a fun side of kindness. I really did. I didn't think it was really heavy. I took that sort of comment from the poet. Now, even as the sun goes down, the poet rests, feeling the retire before the other fire. Just kind of thinking of what was done, what was said, what was written, what was read, you know, everything that we have on our plates and our writing, and we write tears and we write giggles. But what do we take on this from, like, the septum brandy, the septum tequila, you know, and this is all so much. And what do we get from all of our thoughts about tomorrow, and what do we think about? We just kind of let down and watch the world.
You're breaking up.
Oh, no.
No. Honestly, no. Your speaker's being very unkind.
Can't hear her.
I almost rather hear Amadeus.
There you go. It started out okay. Yes, definitely. It started out okay, and I could hear your enthusiasm, and then it started like you sounded underwater or something.
I'm sorry.
Oh, well, that's technology, not you.
It's okay.
But it was, yeah, I was going to say, and I felt bad because you were giving like this amazing comment. But, okay. Now we can hear you better at least. And incredible poem, Titus. I do notice that he is on the board. So hello, Titus. Great share.
Hello, Titus.
I hope you heard that nobody wants to read their poem after you, but somebody's got to go after you. So I'm turning the mic over to my sweet because she's going to go after Titus.
Yes, and Titus, I thought you were lighthearted about it. I thought it was fabulous. Okay.
Let's see. This is peace. Never.
Sorry, I was going to say, you could tell us about the quote that you chose first.
The quote? Absolutely. I was inspired by the quote, "He calls with longing to be loved, but hears no reply, just the raindrops falling on a rooftop nearby." And I love the picture. So this is called "Peace Never Found Them." The hours pray for minutes to slow as days age into centuries. Diamonds once again turn to coal and the bloodless become dust as the wind blows cold across the barren land of the loveless. Cursed to earth by evil birth, a blackened heart the devil gave her, her skin the color of snow, with earth soil spun within her hair, an abandoned angel lost in a sinner's grin, waiting on a savior. Her feathered friends, death and peace, told tales of woe, and she was forced to cage the mean one. For peace was bold and sought to tell the world to follow in his wisdom. Death was kind to all mankind and natural in his fairness. No one escaped the final fate, regardless of what bounds them. Love or hate, never judged, taken to the grave of blindness. Doves in white cry tonight as love is warped in madness. Death is not kind, and peace is the cause of sadness. Tears that flow met both blows in hatred of passion. Ravens caw the melodies of the dying in woeful tone, all died alone, wishing for a hand to hold. Her locked away in a cage, peace never found them. Cursed to earth by evil birth, a blackened heart the devil gave her, her skin the color of snow, with earth soil spun within her hair, an abandoned angel lost in a sinner's grin, waiting on a savior. The hours pray for minutes to slow as days age into centuries. Diamonds once again turn to coal, and the bloodless become dust as the winds blow cold across the barren land of the loveless. And poem.
Wow. Okay, for starters, I like the way you took us from that barren land of loveless all the way back to it from the beginning to the end, which was really, really cool. Man, where am I going to go? Cursed to earth by evil birth, a blackened heart the devil gave her, her skin the color of snow, with earth soil spun within her hair. The images there are fabulous, but this is what I was trying to get to. An abandoned angel lost in a sinner's grin, waiting on a savior. That is one of those brilliant lines that I wish I wrote and should probably be a prompt for a contest, because imagine what could come, an abandoned angel lost in a sinner's grin, waiting on a savior. The just that line goes really, really amazingly with the art. Doves in white cry tonight as love is warped in madness. Death is not kind, and peace is the cause of sadness. Tears that flow met both foes in hatred of passion. As usual, I was engrossed in every word you were saying and hanging on the stanza to see what came next. And cursed to earth by evil birth is just like wicked. Is this a form? Because I'm trying to see if there was anything written. Because it's sort of like there's a trickle down to it in some of the lines. whether it is or isn't. I think
if there is, it's all by accident.
Really? Well, it's really awesome, and they trickle in just the right spots to keep the images going. And I think that when you sit down and you sink your talons into the details that you're going to give us in each thing, you always blow me away. Really, really impressive, and it speaks so well to the quote and to the art and to the feel of that barren and loveless space that you were pulling from the art. Really great job. Really, really awesome. Let me go to Raconteur, please.
Oh, and this is why people follow you. You don't normally rhyme, but this is amazing. From beginning to end, sweet. I mean, seriously. I'm going to end up trying to figure out how to get online to nominate this, because, I mean, this is stunning. The loveless, the whole feel of it, the whole, you make people want to give you a hug, even though, you know, you could tell that you don't want to be touched by half of us. So, you know, it's like, you know, the unwashed masses. Yeah, thanks. No thanks. The book ending, you know, is gorgeous. The idea of the smile of a sinner while waiting for a savior, the deception implied in that is brilliant. I mean, there's so much in this that you know. Again, you know, you kind of want to give you a hug, but at the same time, you know, you realize, it's beyond your reach. It's gorgeous, really. I mean, humbling even.
Thank you.
It's beautiful, sweet, really.
Thank you.
Raconteur, I might have just gone to the nomination page, and I wrote, Raconteur would like to nominate this one. Amazing dark details and imagery. And feel. Wow. So you did just nominate it. Just saying. David, will you comment for Sweet?
Wow, this was quite the story, Sweet. Man, I thought you did the prompt more than justice. You actually turned it into a three-dimensional image, to me anyway. I really like the first line of the second stanza, cursed to earth by evil birth, a blackened heart the devil gave her. Wow. That belongs in a rock song, I think. Those are lyrics, not poetry, but this kind of reminds me of of something that Pink Floyd would do or somebody like that. Maybe Metallica, I don't know.
Yeah.
Ozzy Osbourne.
Sorry. No, sorry. Nothing that crap. But anyhow, this is a beautiful, beautiful poem. Doves in white cry tonight if love is warped in madness. Death is not, and peace is the cause of sadness. Tears that flow, met both foes in hatred, passion. You know, this kind of, I don't know how I come about this, but this sort of reminds me of some of the crap that's going on over in the Ukraine right now. It has the overtones of that. To me, it does in a way. But I think you really, really did a beautiful job on this. The descriptions are first rate, and so are the adjectives. I really liked it. The Dark Mother loved it, too. She told
me. Thank you. Cool. Thank
comment.
You.
And Heather, while I grab your poem and put it on the board, will you comment for my suite?
Please. Brain dark stuff, yeah. You know, first of all, say, we're off Stardust. I like the way you ended that. Get that feeling. Also, tell the frickin' brokenhearted I was here. See ya. Before the first to earth by evil birth, a blackened heart, the devil gave her the skin, the color of snow. This is just sort of eerie, the way you did it. With earth spun, earth to soil spun within her hair. An abandoned angel, lost in a sinner's grin, waiting on a savior. Yeah. Did the brokenhearted, I was here. Gotta go. Good job. How are you feeling?
Thank
anyway?
You. I'm doing much better, thank you.
Are you?
Yeah. Hanging in there. You get my invite.
Invite?
Did you go get my special invite for tomorrow?
And Rice?
Yeah.
I hope this is right. I wrote.
Good.
Am I supposed to go? No.
I just have a quick question. Sweet, are you going to stay till after Hatters or do you have to go?
No, I'm going to stay till after Hatters.
Okay, because I just want you to be able to push your show. So go ahead, Hatter, please.
Okay, I wrote to the same quote. You picked. He calls with the longing to be loved, but hears no reply. Just the raindrops falling on a roof near rooftop nearby. And it got a little bit out of hand. It started with the picture, went to the quote, and you tell me. It goes like this. Taken to a place I'd not been before, my heart aches in colors, I knock at the door. Echoes with glasses, he knows not my name, breaking the reasons before I am to blame. Caution with maps with double yellow lines, watching the tables, drinking Hatter's wine. I heard the voices inside my head. One says there's trouble. The other says I'm dead. I'm started to run, but sometimes holds me back. I see a red door, but I want to paint it black. I heard someone scream, is this all real? Pause to collect as it appeared to conceal. Counting the letters you left in the rain, holding the better so it gives me no pain. My thoughts in bows before you go. I wish to let you be. So tell me now, can you somehow just please remember me?
What an ending. Wow. Okay. I you know, for one thing, I like the little nod to the you see the red door and you want to paint it black. I like how you tossed that in there. It was pretty cool. Taken to a place I'd not been before, my heart aches in colors. I knock at the door. Echoes with glasses. He knows not my name, breaking the reasons before I'm to blame. Damn. Caution with maps with double yellow lines, watching from tables, drinking Hatter wine. Gotta watch that Hatter wine. You don't know what it might be infused with. And then I hear someone scream, is this all real? I pause to collect as it appeared to conceal. Like a sense of impending something after each stanza, that there's a counting the letters you left in the rain, holding the better so it gives me no pain. I mean, wow. And I could have sworn there was a marshmallow mentioned in there. Maybe it just hit me that way in one of the lines. I don't know. But, of course, the Hatter rhyme and flow is always there. Maybe that's what it is. The marshmallow part is in your closing question, or please remember me. It's like, just rip my heart out. Who could forget Hatter? I mean, come on. Seriously. You're Hatter. You just don't realize how special you are to all of us. One of these days we might drill it through your head. Right, sweet? Great share, Hatter.
Oh, God, yes.
Go ahead and comment,
Doc. Entwined in my head is the Hatter rhyme. How do I ever forget that? This is gorgeous. But I do not like the lines. I heard the voices in my head. One says they're trouble. The other says I'm dead. Oh, that just sent chills up my body. I mean, I love that. And I also love counting the letters you left in the rain, holding the better so it gives me no pain. I love counting letters you left in the rain. I think that is probably a brilliant, brilliant line. Holding the better so it gives me no pain. I think that that's just got so much metaphorical potential. For what are the letters you left in the rain? See, I can be thinking like actual letters. I can be thinking love letters. I just, you know, are you holding all the good ones? You know, I love that line because it brings so many different thoughts in my head. So I think it's brilliant. I think you did really well with this one. But okay. Everyone remembers they're entwined with the Hatter. Besides, I'm the Burt Marshmallows. On your sweet, or you're the Burt Marshmallows on my sweet potato pie. So we're always entwined.
That was huge. Let me get these comments for him, and then we'll have you push your show. Raconteur, what did you think?
Yeah, he did a great job, Hatter. I like the red door. Not so much because of the Rolling Stones, but the reference that you made before that about the voices in your head. One says you're trouble, the other says you're dead. You know, that coincides with the colors, you know, the red door and painting it black to me. So, you know, intentional or not, that was just where my head went. You know, it kind of tied it together. And the whole thing has a lovely thread through it of being, as to the quote, you know, the idea of being forgotten and dismissed. You know, and that unfortunately familiar feeling that so many of us have had to experience. You articulate it well and in lovely Hatter fashion.
Awesome comment. And David?
Well, I don't know where to start on this. Everybody's done such a great job of commenting on it. Yeah, I agree with what Rakdis said about it. You know, we've all been through this situation that this poem describes. You know, it says, I see a red door and I want to paint it black. To me, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's death. It just means that it doesn't want anything around him that's cheerful, or you just kind of want to take out your frustrations by painting the door black or whatever, I guess. I don't know. I heard someone scream, is this all real? I paused to collect as it appeared to conceal, counting the letters you left in the rain, holding the better so it gives me no pain. Yeah, you got to hold on to some of the better parts of life and experiences and stuff. And that sort of eases the pain a little bit. I really like this poem, Hatter. You did a really fine job, as usual. It's always fun to read your stuff. Your rhyming meter is always perfect. Your storylines are always really interesting and fascinating. And they just don't let go of you. Once you start reading one of these poems, you have to go all the way through it. Fortunately, they're not very long, not as long as mine anyway. So well done, Hatter. Nice job.
Yeah, thank you. I think it goes to in England the red door meant welcome.
Mhm. Yeah.
So I see a red door, I want to paint it black. I think it might refer to that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Cool comments, everyone, and awesome poem, Hatter. And before David reads, will you tell us what's happening tomorrow, maybe?
Tomorrow night, I'd like to invite each and every one of you to my show. A little nibble, a little taste, a little blood, a little waste. For it's Anne Rice night on the show tomorrow. So come join me, 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. look at some of the beautiful quotes of Anne Rice books, everything from Lestat to The Witching Hour. And let's write about a little craziness from the world of Anne Rice. Horror authors featuring Anne Rice on Sweet Discussions. And there are a few invitations I sent out here and there with a little tantalizing fun stuff. Unfortunately, I didn't get you all, but I hope you enjoyed the ones I did send out.
Awesome. Sounds like a fun show. And
yes.
Be there or be square. Mr. Dave Stevens, you're please on board, will you read for us?
What's that? Can't hear
you,
Dave.
On the board. Will you read for us, please?
Oh, okay. All right. Well, when I looked at this prompt, I always take these prompts and I blow them up in Photoshop so I can see everything that's on them. Helps me formulate a poem for them. And this one said live, and then it's talking about blues and stuff. And I played in a band in a small tavern in Oregon City, blues band, and there's just something really special about a small tavern like that that has really good blues music in it. So it reminded me of Albert King, who's my favorite all-time blues guitarist. I sort of cut my teeth on how to play the electric guitar by playing along with him. And so that's and his favorite, my most favorite song that he does is called I'll Play the Blues for You. And so I named this poem, He'll Play the Blues for You. And I used the prompt, it is said, he calls with longing to be loved, but hears no reply, just the raindrops falling on a roof nearby. And that's why Phil the Poet. And it sounds like this. Steely notes spiked in indigo, roll out amplified a million times, product of a left-handed guitar player from Indianola, Mississippi. I cut my teeth on the electric guitar, listening to his sapphire scales, pushed and shoved around by his flavor of string bending, sometimes simplistic in its architecture, difficult to reproduce for this right-handed white boy. Show me, Uncle Albert, my heart always said to him. He taught generations after him the words, I'll play the blues for you. He was my mentor. I'm in good company, too. Jimi Hendrix, Mike Bloomfield, Joe Walsh, and more. Nothing polishes a soul like live electric blues inside a small club with a little alcohol to wash it all down. To me, would taste fine with just water. He'll play the blues for you, large black man with a heart of blue. You couldn't help but love the man. No racial coloring in his soul, just the music in the time signature of the blues. Standing on the stage, this black oak tree, and his Gibson Flying V, feeding an old Ampeg amplifier, such magical allusions to the god of the blues, just goes to show you don't need brand new. Albert's blues, sharp and cutting. You want it to cleave you in two. You want it to pierce your heart. You want it to put tears in your eyes. It will, if you let it in. Once you've heard his music, you'll never forget it. He'll play the blues for you. He's played the blues for the entire world. Those notes in every shade of blue, painted by broken hearts, cheating colors that have faded and ran down the walls of our hearts, running into pictures we all recognize and pools of the brokenhearted. David, my man, I have tears in my eyes. Your heart holds such precious metal. For this Albert King, I shall visit him. Words from my purple vapor queen, tinged in gunpowder and cotton candy. Electric blues, my love, electric blues, I told the Dark Mother. He'll play the blues for you, my queen. And a poem.
Way cool. We always get such a kick out of it when you bring in the Dark Mother. And I like how he was playing for her at the end there. Tinged in gunpowder and cotton candy. Electric blues, my love. I thought that was really cool. But back. Where is that, my mom? Show me Uncle Albert. My heart always said to him, he taught generations after him the words, "I'll play the blues for you." I thought that was a nice tribute nod to actually the Uncle Albert and to the blues there. Back further, I cut my teeth on the electric guitar listening to the Sapphire Scales. I love that, Sapphire Scales. Nice metaphor. Pushed and shoved around by his flavor of strings blending, sometimes simplistic, and its architecture difficult to reproduce for this right-handed boy. I mean, really, really cool. I like that you looked at the guitar and jumped with the blues there. But again, I really, really like that he sat down and, "David, my man, I have tears in my eyes. Your heart holds such precious metal for the Albert King. I shall visit him." I mean, sometimes you pull us so far into these stories that it just feels like another day in the life of the Dark Mother. He'll play the blues for you, Queen, and your admiration for her shows in your closing line. So, like, another really, really cool share, David. I appreciate it. And before I get you a couple of comments, let's say hi to Sky, Sky, Sky. Hey, Sky.
Hello. How are you guys?
Glad.
Hi, Sky.
Doing okay. Glad you're here. It's funny because I was just looking at the board to see what's left and stuff like that, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to move this one down, and then if she's not able to call, that's okay. We'll put it on another, you know, the next time we have a show, we'll put it over there and see what happens. I was starting to get a little bit worried, so I'm glad you're here. And
yeah,
I was wondering, are you time crunched here? Are you?
No, I said I fell asleep. Oh, my God.
Oh, okay. So you had a bit of a nap, huh? All right, well, I'm just about to get some comments for David, so sit tight, doll. Hatter, what you think?
Yeah, I love the mention of King Uncle Albert. I thought for sure it was Beatles Uncle Albert that you said it.
Thank you, me too.
Yeah, well, you know, George and John loved the blues, the old blues players. A lot of them felt, especially Clapton, felt that they weren't deserving or didn't know how to play the blues right correctly. Clapton tore himself up from that, that he felt he could play the notes, but he couldn't play the blues. He didn't know. He never lived in a world of, could get that passion until an event in his life that probably did it for him, instead of playing. Because what he wanted, something that he couldn't do in his younger life, being a guru of the guitar, but stressed because he couldn't play the blues, right?
Hmm.
I don't know, speaks volumes. There are a good piece to standing on the stage, the Flying V. Where's that part? Towards the top. I can't find it. Anyway, I love the wording in the beginning of the your piece. Kept my attention. Any musician plays, and you can see their passion, and I can get my attention. Good job.
Thank you.
Great comment, Hatter. And Raconteur?
Yeah, I was like Hatter. You know, I grew up with the Beatles, so I hear Uncle Albert right away. My head went to their song. But, you know, that they mentioned Uncle Albert as, you know. But the whole idea of, you know, the blues, you really personified, you took that from the prompt and really embraced it. You know, you did a great job with the idea of that and carried it through emotionally. It was lovely.
Thank you. Well, Albert King has a very unique sound to his guitar. He has a real thin cutting sound to it, and that's due to mainly to the amplifier that he uses and his guitar. And he doesn't sound like anybody else, and he doesn't play like anybody else.
Didn't he tune his guitar to a sharp?
No, I don't know. I don't know about that. He might have.
He's
a left-handed guitar player, and they all sound different. So,
yeah,
Jimmy and him and some of the other ones that are left-handed, Tony Iommi, you know, they all sound different than a right-handed player. I don't know what it is, but.
Yeah, I seem to remember something about him. Somebody, a bass player that played with him, said he tuned his guitar strangely. I can't remember how he did it.
Yeah, well, it could be. I don't know. I never paid any attention to it. I just like what came out of it.
He's tuning it to the string bending, is he, when he does that?
Well, it couldn't have been that far off because if his tunings were different, that much different, my guitar wouldn't have jived with his when I was playing along with him. So it wasn't that far off. I think he might have down-tuned one of the strings or something. But
it's like the harmonica. You got to have the right harmonica key and the key to be able to play because the other ones won't. You can't because it's not. If it's an A or C or E or G, I don't know. I don't know what he's saying. I'll look that up. Let you know.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. Now, I hadn't realized, but we have like 7 minutes of live left. Angel's on the board, and I told her how I would read for her next. So will you guys click on her poem, please? Oops, I should have muted. I was typing. Do you see it?
Yeah, it's up.
Okay. This is called My Happy Ending by Heavenly Angel. And here we go. He's my Valentine. He's my look of the owners. He authors my dreams, whose heartbeat beats with mine, merged. I'm his April Fool. With just a glance from his handsome face, he could send me flying beyond the Milky Way, surging through my veins. No other description would suffice. We make our own fireworks, 4th of July's too, escaped in whispered sighs of sweet and heavy honey when our lips meet. It's a sip of nectar sweet as fine wine and taste, and I am intoxicated. I'm sorry, one taste and I am intoxicated. I feel the texture of his colors. Morning sun marks the day with its buttery goldenrod, velvet showers blushing like crimson under a whiskey-stained sky. We speak in movements and breaths. He breathes through my lungs. I feel through his skin, bleed through his veins. I see through his eyes. He pours over me like water, covers my body, covers my spirit, intoxicates the senses. Together we expand beyond limitations and capabilities, creating a new form of relating. We are the life beyond words, completing sentences, completing thoughts, because words are simply one more way to love him. He was not my beginning, but he will certainly be my end, my happy ending. And poem. I really, really like that at the end there. He is not my beginning, but he will certainly be my end, my happy ending. Sort of speaks of a second chance that she's going to hold on to for dear life forever there. But I like, what was that? We speak in movements and breaths. He breathes through my lungs. I feel through his skin, bleed through his veins, and I see through his eyes. And up further, I feel the textures of his colors. Morning sun marks the day with its buttery goldenrod, velvet showers blushing like crimson under a whiskey-stained sky. It's like gorgeous image, but even more powerful than the imagery is the emotion, the love, the tenderness, the countless ways that they are one, merged, actually, as she put it, which I really liked. I think this is beautiful. And the quote, I should have did that first, but the quote that she wrote to is, "Let us rest until the morning sun marks the day with its golden rod, catching the sweet nectar of a brand new day on the wings of a breeze." And harmony, the velvet showers that fall on a mosaic field blushing like crimson under a whiskey-stained sky. And as far as that goes, I can feel you because I quite often cannot just pick one, so I pick multiple quotes myself. And I think that you did a fine tribute to both of the quotes. It's an absolutely gorgeous piece, and it's always my honor to be your reader. Thank you, Angel. And Sky, how about you take the first comment?
Yeah, I thought it was a beautiful piece, and I really loved, for some reason, the soft nuance of we make our own fireworks, 4th of July, too. I just loved that additive and that kind of reflection and, like, almost like a dual thought. I just really liked that. And then, of course, the beautiful way that, where was this one?
Take my line.
Like up towards the end. I'm looking for it. Sorry about that. How she says words are just another way to love him. I think that was the way that it was written. I thought that was also very beautiful. And I love the inflection of first speaking about, the other person, and then going into we, and then going back, kind of going back to focusing on the person. I loved those transitions. I thought those were really cool because it became more intimate when it became like not just a reflection of someone else, but like they were in it together. I thought it was a beautiful piece.
Awesome comment. And
thank you. Yeah, he offers my dreams. What a line. I'm his April Fool. I'm jealous. I'm going to have to get her permission to take that line. She's just a warm fuzzy, man. Just bring it on. What it's supposed to be, and this is a commercial where nothing goes wrong. Everybody's, like to buy a world of Coke.
Well, I don't think that you'll get permission to steal the line, but she just might let you borrow it if you ask her nice. David, what did you think?
Oh, this was really, really something. Of course, all her stuff is. I like the line here on the third stanza says, "We make our own fireworks, 4th of July's too." "Escape in whispered sighs of sweet and heavy honey when our lips meet. It's a sip of nectar sweet as fine wine, one taste and I am intoxicated." Boy, nobody writes love poetry like she does. She's just a sorceress of this, I think. Everything about this is really, really nice. It's really descriptive. "He pours over me like water, covers my body, covers my spirit, intoxicates the sense
that
we expand." beyond limitations and capabilities, creating a new form of relating. The whole thing is just amazing. Angela should pat herself on the back for doing this. Well done.
We are the life behind words, including sentences.
Great comment, Vic. What'd you say, Hat?
It's okay. I'm just in awe at some of the lines that she used. I'm just that it didn't. We are life behind words, completing sentences, completing thoughts. We're the poets. Damn it, I'm a poet.
Yeah. You definitely are a poet, Hatter. Now let me see here. Raconteur, everybody commented for Angel, right? I'm sorry, I got a little sidetracked. Rack, did you comment for Angel? Rack got cut off. Oh, no, and he's not going to be able to get back in. Okay, all right, I got his recording. All right, I have your poem on the board, Sky, but I thought you might want to tell the listeners about what's happening on Thursday before you read.
Oh, yes, so I have Down the Tube on Thursday night at 8 p.m. I had to move it back to 8 p.m. because it's parent teacher's night. But there are three prompts, as always, and they're really fun. At least I think they are. Let me see. We got this coral reef, and it's another way, like, people can be buried, and instead of being buried, they can, make their remains out into, they take the bone and they put it in small coral reefs to build back our coral reefs in the ocean. It's really cool, the whole idea behind it. And then, of course, we got frogfish, because I love my weird sea creatures, and then the giant prehistoric dragonfly, which is huge, by the way. And again, with these, you don't have to go nonfiction. You can. You can do fantasy, nonfiction, a little bit of both. You know, it's where you take the inspiration. So bring me a poem related to it, and then we talk about the topic. And that's it. It'll be fun. And that's on at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Thursday.
Topic.
Sounds awesome. And your poem is on the board, so show us what you got.
Thank you. This is called, and thank you, Deb, because I don't think I wrote a poem. I think it was like 2 months in between my poems. I went on a writing hiatus. So thanks for breaking that for me. This is called Cassia Bark in Autumn's Cloven Thread. There's a spool of dry pimpernella and curry powder thread that wraps the glass of royal lantern like autumn cloven thread. And in Gambu's gardens of crushed red pepper reeds are the bare willowing bones of sentinel timber eaves. They stoop to water mirrors, to eye a burl of mahogany tusks, friends of cassia bark and paprika that garnish season's flock.
Gorgeous word. That wraps the glass of oil lantern like aluminum's cloven, aluminum, like autumn's cloven treads. Whoa, cloven treads, I like that. They stoop to water mirrors, to eye a burl of mahogany tucks. I like that phrase, to stoop to water mirrors, like to see the reflection there. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 little couplets, but yet there's such gorgeousness put in there. And the use of words like the curry powder threads is really, really clever. Cassia bark. I don't think I know what cassia is, and paprika that garnish the season's flux. But the colors, the spices that you used to color this are really spot on. And there's something about the excuse me, I'm losing my voice here, the Curry Power Threads that's just blowing me away for some reason. But I really want to
I know for a fact she doesn't make up words. Right, Sky?
No, there's no made up words in this one. Cassia bark has like a cinnamon color. Yeah. There's no made up words.
Oh, okay. So another another spice then. But the art does look like it's got the cinnamons and like even ginger and the curry powder, the whole bit. So like I love that you use those colors to put the it's like a she used perfect colors to pull them all out, and you can see them all vividly, the cinnamons and everything. So I think that this came out excellent, Sky. I'm so
Thank
glad
you
were able to call. So, Hatter, you want to comment for Sky?
Yeah, I was going to hit on that too. The curry powdered threads reminded me of the Angel Flight suits back in the day, the disco dancers. The only orange suit that I ever saw. yeah, the autumn's cloven thread. I love that it rhymed through it. Did I hear you say that you were having a writer's block? Is that what it was, or you just took some time?
I've just been really busy, and I've been reading a lot, and I was reading a lot, so I just kind of I took a little bit of a break there for a while.
Yeah. Self-reflection, epiphanies.
Yeah.
With eye of burrowing mahogany text. What is Cassia bark?
So I put it on the board for you to buy.
Oh, thank you.
So that picture was quite beautiful, and you know, it just I try to bring colors in for them when I write for her. So, you know, this time we went a little bit of seasonal with seasons, like seasons, like seasonings. It's a little pun there.
I know, I like that. The spices and the seasoning, way cool.
Thank you.
Can
you comment
for Sky? Yeah, I think that this is seasonally correct. I wouldn't have thought to use all of these different seasonings, but that's really clever, Sky. I don't know half of any of these colors really, but. The way you wrote it and the slant that you gave it, it gives me a pretty good idea what they are and how they're used. You would not want to eat my cooking anyway. But anyway, this is really, you know, for six stanzas or six couplets, this is really a fascinating, description of autumn and I don't know how you do it with just that few words. I'm so verbose anyway, but this is really cool. I really enjoyed listening to you read it. It's a learning curve for me. I find out what Pimpinella is. I have no idea what that is. But anyway, it's beautiful. You really did the prompt justice too. It just fits right in there. So, well done. You're a fantastic poetess.
Thank you very much. And mahogany burl is actually strung together that way. I mixed it up here, but it's just a type of like wood varnish and type of wood, and you varnish it down. It makes it beautiful furniture, but I switched, but it says burl of mahogany, chin of mahogany burl. But yeah, check out the beautiful colors. Yeah, I literally just pulled through the colors. Thank you so much. Steve.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Comment. And Dave, while you're at the mic, would you mind reading a poem for me? And then we'll just have two recordings left after that.
You bet.
Deb, I'm just going to sneak out and go back to bed. I got to go to school in the morning.
No, I appreciate you calling, Sky. Get some rest, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Respect.
You too.
Okay, and David, this is by Rorschach, so I am putting it on the board right now. And if you just read that for us, I appreciate it.
Yeah, just a second here. Let me get over there. I don't know why I am having problems with it right now. Just a second.
Rorschach, flat.
Okay, here we go. Okay, Rorschach's Flat, is that the way you say it, I guess? Anyway, poem by him, called By Any Other Name. The silver smoke-laced eyes drag a rusted anchor worn as an albatross to stay a balance and sink from the heady clouds, sailing sapling dreams which bend as the boughs weave into a bow, crash against tidal force, written in moonbeam tranquility from the quill dipped from a well of breath, hesitant and bereft. Autumn burns red and the onyx shell quakes, pinholes by falling stars rage, a glow wired cage cinched in cornerstone note, wherein I peer with frail hapless sight, music alive in the static white contrast to her sigh, the wild of rumination tepidly washed docile, garden incantation whispers to summon, rosebuds bloom in kickback of rushing, a reverberated flow, my love caught in the amber stranglehold, tilting at windmills heavy in the gray of chamomile nod, dragons are pillars of salt forgotten not, looking through a shade darker with hope, light is betwixt the feeble hang of chains, clasps and grit gasps from necktie rope, knee the burrowed wade of tears, faltering to rinse the poppy from blue ivy lips. Cradle my fair-skinned constellation of sin falling loosely through me as shattered glass stand, ever reflecting beyond the seeking sink of sea's regret, sift ever so into oblivion's bleed, waking eyes roll back into the abyss. The candle dances in her iris, feigning life sets as castles built upon the storm crumble, forsaken words forked bend into my being. Opaque flecks of faceless turn blind, cauterizing sting blinks, ripped apart by the seams. Stitched feverishly back in panicked patch, I read her braille flesh, the fault of my pride to attempt to save one who does want death. The glancing blow of life strikes me, Cupid's failing arrow marked me dead, zigzag the stars crossed out, in the undertow of love's font I drown. With dubious shining armor, a death mask of honor, forever beneath the hubris of a saved horror, blight of the poppies, live nightmares and die dreams, kills love in the madness. The dragons slay Don Quixote, and upon the stone rabble grave an epitaph laughs by any other name. End poem.
Thank you, David. And the
You're
quote
welcome.
That Rorschach wrote to was number 8. He calls with longing to be loved, but hears no reply, just like the raindrops falling on a rooftop nearby. I think some of the images through here, like autumn burns red and the onyx shell quakes, pinholes by falling stars rage, that pinholes by falling stars rage. I really like the image there. because it's like a light shining through pinholes is a good description of those stars. Tilting at windmills, heavy in the gray of the chamomile nod, dragons are pillars of salt, forgotten not, looking through a shade darker than hope, darker with hope. I love all the different images and the feelings there, and need the burrowed weight of tears faltering to rinse the poppy from blue ivy lips. I mean, to rinse the poppy, some of the metaphors are really fantastic, like the candle dances in her iris, feigning life sets as castles build upon the storm, like the fairy tale is all wrapped up in her eyes. Wow, there's a lot here. The glancing blow of life strikes me, Cupid's falling arrow marking me dead. Cupid's arrow is supposed to mark you in love, not dead. So that was like, whoa, zigzag, the storm crossed out, right? In the undertow of love. The undertow of love. I like that too. So he's got brilliant, brilliant metaphors all through this one. I'm going to have to read this one again after the show because there's so much here. Fabulous share, and I appreciate it. Again, I hope you're feeling a little better, and maybe you call next time. Not that David didn't do an excellent job, but it's always more awesome to hear it in the poet's voice themselves. So feel better. Great share. And I'm going to go to David for a comment.
Well, this was really intense. I had to really concentrate when I read it because there were so many metaphors put into this and adjectives and the way they were juxtaposed to each other. It was hard for me to read it. I'll admit that, but it was fascinating at the same time. And I guess that's what separates this kind of poetry from what I write. But this was really good. I agree with what you said about it, Deborah. It's one of these poems that you should read two or three times if you want to really understand it. You know, it's not that difficult to understand, but there's a lot of information in these stanzas, and it's easy to overlook them, those meanings, when you're reading it the first time through. I don't have that kind of comprehension that some people do.
I think it's structured like what you call a soliloquy. It's your own thoughts, and you can go abstract with that thought because you know what it means, and only you know what it means.
And that's
it's
true.
It's the long run-on sentence, and I picked up a pattern. He rhymed the last two lines of the first run-on sentence is the way to write free, I believe, and he does a good job. The silver smoke-laced eyes drag a rusted anchor worn as an albatross to stay at a balance and sink from ready clouds, sailing sapling dreams and bend and boughs weaved into a bow crashing against the tidal force written in moonbeam tranquility from the quill dipped from the well of breath, hesitant and bereft. Now he does the same thing at the end of the second one, brushing the reverberated flow of love caught in the amber stranglehold. I don't know if he continues it, but that's a cool little way to make it a rhyme. Good job.
Awesome.
Good rest to you.
Awesome comments, you guys. And the last two that we have left are excuse me, recordings. And we'll play them in a moment. I just want to tell you that I am tossing a link on the board. The artist that I found for next week, you're not going to believe it, but his name is Greg Crayola Simpkins. So how can somebody who uses crayons so much not click on his page. And right? So I clicked on there, and this Greg Crayola Simpkins been in the industry for quite a while, and he has art in stuff like Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2, in Spider-Man 2, and in the Ultimate Spider-Man. And he made his leap to a full-time artist in 2005. And his art is like, I don't want to say crazy, because it's like, some of it's, you look at it and you're like, whoa, what is that? I mean, even the caterpillar has in one of the pieces of art, the caterpillar's holding a green crayon. And then there's one that's filled with Sesame Street characters. But all the Sesame Street characters, like Big Bird and Kermit, are riding one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Or for example, if you're a South Park fan, Kenny's finally got some wings. They killed Kenny. So he's got Dumbo is there. And what else? There's a, not quite, but almost a Batman. There's even a bit of a play towards, I thought there was a play towards Wonderland. Okay, there's the rabbit, and there's a dog with a ball of booze. I think Dave might get a kick out of that one. There's birds, there's butterflies. There's even a raven that takes off a man's mask and the raven's underneath, rather than, you know how the death thing has a beak that a man wears? Well, this is a beak wearing a man mask. So there's Pinocchio. There it is. There's, instead of a Cheshire cat with a caterpillar, there's a Cheshire rat. So, I mean, he's got a bat with wings. So there was something so outrageous about the stuff that this man does that I, even Edward Scissorhands he played with. So, and there's more than one dog one. There's one towards the back that's got a dog and a butterfly. So anyway, yeah, check him out. He's got some really cool stuff. And he does even have one with the Cheshire cat. So it should be interesting. I can't wait to see which one Sweet grabs, as a matter of fact. But anyway, we are way over time, so let's get these last two on the board. I don't know how we lost Raconteur, but if you guys click on his poem, we will do his poem and then Gerald Green's. So Raconteur's is called Morning Sunshine, and he wrote, I have it over here, he wrote to the quote, where is it? It is number two. Let us rest until the morning sun marks the day with its goldenrod, catching the sweet nectar of a brand new day on the wing of a breeze. That's by Phil the Poet. And here comes the poem by Raconteur.
Morning Sunshine by Raconteur. As the dawn breaks into an intoxicating sunrise, almost as enchanting and brilliant as your smile, and your eyes open to reveal to the morning light the essence of the heartbreaking beauty it cultivates. May its illumination kiss you tenderly as I would, while its warmth caresses your aches and pains like a healing balm throughout your day, causing your troubles to be carried away on the winds. End poem.
This one is pretty. It's got such tenderness, and there's like a sweetness. And your eye opens to reveal the morning light, the essence of the heartbreaking beauty it cultivates. My goodness, may its illumination kiss you tenderly as I would, while its warmth caresses. I mean, that's gorgeous. And I'm noticing that it's on a couple of lists. And I remember when I heard this one the first time, it's one of those ones when you're done hearing it, it's just like, aw, gorgeous, gorgeous brevity. And again, I'm sorry that we lost your call, but thank you for hanging out. Awesome, Paul. Let me get you a couple comments. Hatter, can you comment for Rackentor?
Was that a warm and fuzzy?
It was a warm and fuzzy.
Oh, my phone froze, so I wasn't able to follow along, so I was listening really hard.
Surprising to get the warm and fuzzy, huh?
Yeah.
We're used to the bootlocker.
he can make the girls cry, I think.
No, you should talk. But yes, he can. Cool comment, Hatter. And David, what did you think?
Yeah, this was pretty amazing. Gentle and loving, you know. He's comparing the dawn to something, his woman, I guess. And your eyes open to reveal the morning light, the essence of heartbreaking beauty it cultivates. I always thought women looked really nice in the morning. Even if they were all disheveled, they still looked good to me. I like this, the last couplet here. It says, may its illumination kiss you tenderly as I would, while its warmth caresses your aches and pains like a healing balm throughout your day. You're talking about somebody that's over 30 because we all have those little aches and pains that we go through with life. And it seems like the sunshine always makes them feel better. So
it's a poem, it's like a pregnant one. It's like a pregnant woman.
Yeah. Cool comment, you guys. All right,
there's an aura around him.
Yeah.
There's an aura around a pregnant woman.
All right, we'll click on Gerald's poem, please.
Oh, we got one more?
Yeah, we got Gerald. And I am going to push play. And here we go.
Welcome to Gerald Green Poetry. Promise, written and read by Gerald Green. Eventide bestirs with color and intensity, forcing, crushing errant thought of mind and heart by complexity of nature's breast. Breezes waft today, seducing with a lover's touch, but then at times are firm, as if a parent takes control. Water's soft patina reflects with sheen on days like this, not a ripple or disturbance on this glass of glory. Something greater reaches out, beckons, tells about another place where peace and harmony reside and truth is never tarnished. My lover's hand is not enough to quell desire for more, as I feel this beauty calling with her promise of infinity. Satisfaction walks away, does not look back, leaves me as the golden orb slides behind the distant hill. Alone. I'm left alone, as if my spouse did not exist. My other half cannot replace the vacuum of this moment. End poem. Visit YouTube for more Gerald Green poetry.
See, I'm getting better at that, waiting that extra second so that he can say that part. Sometimes I forget that it's coming and I talk over it, so I'm starting to get used to giving him a moment to say that. And if you click on his YouTube insert, you'll see Mr. Gerald Green himself reading that poem. But where was that? Breezes waked today, seducing with a lover's touch, but then at times are firm, as if a parent takes control. Talk about contrast in there. We went from lover's touch to the parent taking control. So, like, there's a mega contrast right there in that stanza. Down a little further, something greater reaches out, beckons, tells about another place where peace and harmony reside and truth is never tarnished. Oh, what a place that must be, where truth is never tarnished. It shouldn't be as hard as it is for people to tell the truth, but Lord help us, it's short, easy for many. I'm not very good at it, at lying or hiding how I feel because I wear my heart on my sleeve. So, you know, sometimes I wish I could, but no, I'm proud to not be good at lying. What a place. The truth is never tarnished. I love that. And then where is, okay, alone. I'm left alone as if my spouse did not exist. My other half cannot replace the vacuum of the moment. What an ending. Does not exist. My other half cannot replace the vacuum of the moment. That's an incredible ending. And I like how often Gerald manages to mention his wife in his poems. I find that so endearing. I think he's a great poet, and I'm very proud that he participates in our shows, but I really like that, the sentiment. He is much more sentimental than he might seem, and again, when he puts his wife in there, you can just feel.
Yeah, awesome. She's got to be an artist too, I would think. I think she paints. I think she's going to be a painter, good painter. Maybe an author too.
Wonder. What'd you think of the poem, Hunter?
You know, you skipped over my, for once you didn't get the one part I wanted to point out. Water's soft patina reflects the sheen on days like this. Like he's, matter of fact, reporting. Not a ripple or a disturbance on this glass of glory. Glass of glory. Why the word glory? That's puzzling. Something greater reaches out. Beckons, tells about another place where peace and harmony reside and truth is never tarnished.
Well, he labeled it spirituality, so
yeah.
I would think that would have something to do with that. You know what I mean? Because you said why the glory, the glass.
Sure. Yeah.
Is usually affiliated with spirit. Yeah, that's my thought anyway. But great comment.
Yeah, satisfaction walks away, does not look back. Leaves me as the golden orb slides behind the distant hill. Well done. Great lines. This is the puzzle, but it pieces the words together. It comes out right. Good job, Jerry.
Great comment. And the last poetic comment of the night goes to David Prophet.
this was really something. I agree with what you had to say. I like hearing him talk about his wife or mention her, bring her into the poem. That way, that's really nice. I know too many men that are married that conveniently forget that when they're, you know, surrounded by other women, and that really pisses me off when they do that. But anyway, that's not what this is about. I thought this was really, really well worded. I like the storyline in it, and I agree with what you said about the last stanza there, Deb. Alone, I'm left alone, did not exist. My other half cannot replace the vacuum of the moment. Sometimes you could be in a whole room full of people and you're by yourself. You know, you're thinking about things. You're contemplating things about maybe what happened today, or something came along and reminded you of something that happened years ago, and it just runs over you like a locomotive all of a sudden, and it doesn't matter who's there. Your president could be there, you know, God forbid. And so, you know, it's I pick up a lot of different meanings out of this poem. There's a lot to take away from it. So Gerald's a good poet, and he shows it every week. So well done, Gerald.
Fabulous comment. Appreciate that very much. And on that note, I want to take a moment and say thank you to Phil the Poet, because, Phil, it was your incredible pieces of your poems that inspired the poems on the show tonight. I hope that you appreciate the poems that you inspired. And I know we appreciated the lines that inspired us. Thank you very much. And I want to thank my big brother, Hatter. And I want to thank my Sweet Pea and AP, my amazing board members. I appreciate you guys. I like doing this because I get to do it with you guys. And David, it's glad to have you back. I'm thrilled that you hung out all night. Raconteur,
sure.
So sorry you got disconnected, but thank you very much. And get back to me about the music, David. And I want to say thank you, AK, and Stephen, and Rack, and Sky, and Angel, and Gerald, and Rorschach, and Marius, and Titus, and again, Phil the Poet. Tonight's show was inspired by you, and we appreciate it. On that note, I put the link up on the board for my show for next week, so you guys can get early choices on the art. And I appreciate you all. And we are like 40 minutes over, so I'm not going to play a song. I'm just going to say love and respect to you all, remind you how much you're appreciated, remind you that if you are able to donate to the food bank, because they're running out of food all over the United States. They've even coined a new phrase called food insecure. Who would have thought we would have had such a label to put on so many of us? So if you can, take some stuff down to the local food bank. They are overwhelmed. And a lot of them have empty shelves.
Hey, Deb.
Love him? Yeah.
I'll take number 19.
Okay, Adam. Cool.
Yeah.
I'll mark that one out for you. All right, guys.
I'm not over.
Let's shut
Thanks.
Down. Appreciate you. Love and respect. And good night.
Good night, Deb.